Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Bob Doty reporting. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says implementing the international nuclear deal with Iran will make the world safer, improve the standard of living for Iranians, and potentially open up other opportunities between the United States and Iran. In an interview with VOA's Persian service, Kerry said he hopes proponents will successfully persuade people that the government will keep Iran from getting a nuclear weapon, prevent conflict, and provide security for the region.
But this deal needed to get the nuclear issue off the table because we were threatened with the possibility of a nuclear arms race in the entire region. And nobody benefits from that.
But the United Nations Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution Monday approving the nuclear agreement. Looking ahead, Kerry said it would be another 6 months or so before the effects of lifting sanctions against Iran are felt.
I think that if the deal goes through and is fully implemented, the people of Iran are going to see an improved standard of living. They'll see sanctions lifted off of them that have prevented commerce, trade, travel, investment, all these other things. So a lot of good things can happen if this deal is fully implemented.
He has been meeting with members of Congress and said he will tell the truth about the deal during the 60 days lawmakers have to review the agreement. Burundians voted in a presidential election Tuesday after a night of unrest sparked by President Pierre Nkurunziza's bid to win a third term. Gunfire and explosions in the capital of Bujumbura left at least two people dead, one of them a policeman. The election went ahead despite an opposition boycott, months of anti-government protests, and appeals from the international community for the president to step aside. This is VOA News. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says a regional joint task force to fight militant group Boko Haram will be up and running by the end of this month. In an interview Tuesday with VOA's Peter Clowney, Mr. Buhari said Nigeria will lead the task force and that troops from Chad, Niger, Nigeria, and Benin could be deployed in operations against the militants. Mr. Buhari is in the middle of a four-day visit to Washington. He met with Secretary of State John Kerry Tuesday, ahead of meetings with members of Congress and a town hall meeting with Nigerians who live in the U.S. On Monday, the Nigerian leader met with President Barack Obama at the White House. Mr. Obama praised the recent election in Nigeria, which led to the first democratic transfer of power since the end of military rule in 1999. Ohio Governor John Kasich, a political veteran, Tuesday is joining the crowded field seeking the 2016 U.S. Republican presidential nomination. The 63-year-old Kasich is the 16th Republican candidate in the race. That includes five current or former U.S. senators, four sitting governors, and four former governors, as well as two figures from the corporate world and a retired neurosurgeon. It is the largest collection of Republican presidential candidates in recent decades, but no clear frontrunner has emerged. Japan says China's aggressive maritime activities in the East China Sea are among the major threats to the country's security as Prime Minister Shinzo Abe pushes through a series of controversial measures aimed at expanding the role of Japan's military. In its annual defense review issued Tuesday, Japan's defense ministry lashed out at Beijing's development of undersea oil and gas reserves in the East China Sea, as well as its increasing military presence near a series of Japanese-controlled islands that are also claimed by China. The report denounced China's activities in the resource-rich South China Sea, where it has begun building several artificial islands, a move which has escalated tensions between Beijing and several of its East Asian neighbors. The chief executive of Toshiba resigned Tuesday in response to revelations the company inflated its profits by $1.2 billion over the course of several years. An independent report blamed the scandal and pressure from company leaders to meet difficult targets. The CEO bowed before cameras in Tokyo and took blame for the scheme, which dates back to 2008. "The responsibility lies in the management, including myself," he said. "As a response, I am stepping down from the post as the CEO and president." Two other high-level Toshiba figures are also stepping down for their involvement. The company's stock rose 6% Tuesday, rebounding from recent losses. I'm Bob Doty in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning and welcome. Welcome to African News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on African News Tonight.
Polls have closed in Burundi's presidential election, which incumbent President Nkurunziza is certain to win after running unopposed. Opposition groups boycotted the poll, arguing that the president is not eligible to serve a third term.
That's reporter Mohamed Yusuf. Details next. Also in the news, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says security and trade will top the agenda during President Barack Obama's visit to the country this week. And the UN Refugee Agency reports increasing numbers of Nigerian refugees in Cameroon are moving to a more secure camp. We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young. And in our feature segment, VOA's Peter Cloete speaks with President Muhammadu Buhari about his meeting with President Obama. Our top story this hour, Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza is set to win a third term in office despite low voter turnout and opposition candidates boycotting the today's vote. Mohamed Yusuf has more from the capital, Bujumbura.
Burundi's Electoral Commission forecasts that three-fourths of eligible voters will cast ballots on Tuesday, but the actual number likely to be much lower. Turnout was light in Bujumbura, held down by opposition boycott of the poll and the fact that more than 170,000 Burundians have fled the country to escape the violent protest against the president. The capital was placed more on edge by gunfire overnight that killed at least two people. One election official told VOA there was also gunfire Tuesday around a polling station. We opened the station at 6 in the morning and people are coming in small numbers. At around 9, we heard gunfire and that has made the turnout to be low. VOA saw one man who did vote trying to remove the indelible ink from his hands for fear of reprisals. There are those who don't want us to vote. They will cut my finger, he said. Thereafter, those who have gone to vote. Some shared optimism, like Faraha Jocelyn. I came out to vote because there is security in the polling station and in the streets. And coming here today makes me feel safe, she said. For others, however, the vote will not change anything. Our only hope is God, this man said. Since I came to vote, but I don't see how my vote is going to help me. We just came to vote. Because of the opposition boycott, President Nkurunziza is guaranteed to win the election. That prospect has led to fears of diplomatic isolation for the Central African country and further unrest internally. One former presidential candidate, Agathon Rwasa, says the future of his country looks bleak.
Even if he could be elected 100% by all the Burundians. So I think we are heading to isolation. And the consequences of the isolation are very, very bad.
The National Election Commission says it is uncertain when the result on Tuesday's vote will be announced. Mohamed Yusuf of VOA News, Bujumbura.
Meanwhile, the International Rescue Committee expects a vast influx in a Tanzanian camp of refugees fleeing Burundi's election-related violence this week. IRC officials are expressing concern for 80,000 Burundians already housed at overcrowded Nyaragusu camp. Camp officials say more than 1,000 appeared over the weekend ahead of today's expected victory for President Pierre Nkurunziza, who runs unopposed for a controversial third term. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says security and trade will top the agenda during President Barack Obama's visit to the country this week. VOA's Gabe Jaslow reports during an address to the nation, the Kenyan president sidestepped more controversial issues, including the International Criminal Court charges against his deputy and an outcry over gay rights.
Speaking from State House in Nairobi Tuesday, President Kenyatta said security and investment go hand in hand and both will be discussed during Mr. Obama's visit. President Obama is coming to Kenya to co-host the Global Entrepreneurship Summit along with the Kenyan president and to hold bilateral meetings. Relations between the two countries have been strained in the past due to international criminal court charges against President Kenyatta and his deputy, William Ruto, for their alleged roles in orchestrating the violence that followed the 2007 election. Mr. Kenyatta said Mr. Obama's visit is a sign of strong ties between the two countries.
All I can say is that those who have doubted the strength of the partnership and friendship between our two countries or the depth of our engagement had better re-examine those assumptions.
Charges against President Kenyatta have been dropped while Ruto and another defendant continue to face trial. The Kenyan president said Ruto will not be excluded from meetings with the American president.
Last I recall, the deputy president was part of this government, so we shall all be meeting and proceeding with what we need to do.
While some politicians in Kenya have raised concerns that President Obama will bring a gay rights agenda with him to Kenya following the U.S. Supreme Court ruling protecting gay marriage, Mr. Kenyatta said this is a non-issue and said it was not part of the agenda for talks. Mr. Kenyatta also emphasized the importance of the Entrepreneurship Summit, which he said promotes Kenya's reputation for innovation and enterprise.
This is the very first time the summit has come to sub-Saharan Africa, and I strongly believe in its choice of Kenya. The GES acknowledges the progress and potential of our nation and its leadership on the continent.
He said Kenya could benefit from increased investment in infrastructure, healthcare, and manufacturing. President Obama is expected to attend the summit during the weekend and to deliver a public address before traveling on to Ethiopia. Gabe Joselo, VOA News, Nairobi.
The UN Refugee Agency reports increasing numbers of Nigerian refugees in Cameroon are moving away from the volatile border area to a UNHCR camp in a more secure region further inland. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration has helped nearly 3,500 Ethiopian migrants stranded by the conflict in Yemen return home. From extensive interviews with returnees, the IOM has pieced together a disturbing picture of traffickers preying upon vulnerable migrants en route to Saudi Arabia in search of work. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says some of the cases documented by aid workers are frightening.
Appears to be militia activity or traffickers, armed traffickers, swapping groups of men back and forth and charging what look to be growing ransoms, anywhere from 2,000 to 4,500 Saudi rials, which is around $600 to $1,000 per person, people being held, tortured, and injured.
Millman says many of the Ethiopian migrants seeking assistance from the IOM have been wounded from airstrikes or shootings involving armed groups. In some cases, he says, the traffickers themselves resort to violence against the men they kidnap on their way to Saudi Arabia. Despite the dangerous war situation in the country, he tells VOA impoverished migrants from the Horn of Africa continue to cross the strait into Yemen in hopes of finding work in Saudi Arabia. He says these people are easily victimized and vulnerable to being captured by traffickers who hold them for ransom.
This pattern has repeated itself across Africa in the last 10 years where vulnerable people become vulnerable to kidnapping by armed groups and then are forced to pay ransom even when it wasn't their intention to make that kind of journey. And that appears to be happening in Yemen now.
Millman says victims who do not come up with the money or are not ransomed by their families are subjected to torture, shootings, and beatings. He says a number of migrants the IOM has repatriated have had to be treated for burns, gunshot wounds, and broken bones. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
14 past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The commander of U.S. military operations in Africa, Brigadier General Donald Baldock, says the United States is ready to provide more training and material to countries affected by the Boko Haram insurgency and piracy in the Gulf of Guinea. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaounde, where Baldock met with Cameroon President Paul Biya.
Brigadier General Donald Baljik says Boko Haram fighters are engaging increasingly in unconventional war tactics, which make fighting the Nigerian terrorist group more complicated.
It is extremely dangerous what they're doing. They're using the populace. They're using female suicide bombers in a way that is a disadvantage to how the military normally operates among the populace. So it does take a period of adjustment, but I think we understand how they operate. We have the tactics, techniques, and procedures to be able to adjust, and we will, in time, defeat them.
Boko Haram fighters have expanded their six-year insurgency to create an Islamic caliphate in northern Nigeria to neighboring countries, killing thousands and displacing hundreds of thousands. Cameroon and Chad have now suffered suicide bombing attacks since June. Baljik says America, through the U.S. Africa Command, headquartered in Stuttgart, Germany, is providing essential partnership support to countries suffering the violent and economic impacts of the insurgency. He also said the United States is helping countries on the Gulf of Guinea reduce terrorism and related piracy attacks by providing material and military intelligence. Baldwin's visit to West Africa coincides with new Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari's four-day visit to Washington to discuss enhanced cooperation against Boko Haram. Mr. Buhari will head to Cameroon next week for further regional military cooperation talks. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Seventeen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza is set to win a third term in office despite low voter turnout and opposition candidates boycotting today's vote. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says security and trade will top the agenda during President Barack Obama's visit to the country this week. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. And in news from outside the continent, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has told VOA that implementing the international nuclear deal with Iran will make the world safer, improve the standard of living for Iranians, and potentially open up other opportunities between the United States and Iran. Secretary Kerry has been playing a lead role in the Obama administration's efforts in obtaining support among skeptical U.S. lawmakers. VOA's Richard Green has more from Washington.
Mr. Secretary, thank you very much.
In an interview with VOA's Persian service, Kerry said he is confident that lawmakers will come to understand that failure to approve the deal reached between Iran and six Western nations could lead to further conflict and war in the troubled Middle East.
Because if we don't have this agreement, then I believe the Ayatollah would say, why should I negotiate with these guys? They haven't delivered. They don't do it. Why would our colleagues in the world support the sanctions when they say the sanctions were supposed to be to get an agreement? But they got one and now they walked away. So the whole thing comes apart with great danger to the region.
Kerry defended the administration against criticism that it should have pushed for an expanded agenda that included human rights issues and getting the release of several Americans under detention in Iran.
Well, this deal, as we said before, if we had chosen any number of issues between Iran and the world community or between the United States and Iran, you know, we'd have been negotiating for 10 years and never gotten anywhere. And we didn't have that kind of time because of the nuclear issue and where the progress was.
Kerry said a lot of good things can happen in regards to Iran if this deal is fully implemented.
Well, it includes the potential of travel, but what it includes immediately is the lifting of specific sanctions on finance, on banking, on the movement of goods. Foodstuffs will be allowed to be sold from Iran, pistachios, carpets, other foodstuffs. I mean, those things will be able to be sold. So it's opening up some things, but not everything yet. The primary embargo still remains in place.
The UN Security Council unanimously adopted a resolution Monday approving the nuclear agreement. The Obama administration submitted the plan to Congress Sunday, beginning a 60-day period for lawmakers to review the deal. The pact must also be approved by Iranian lawmakers. Richard Green, VOA News, Washington.
A humanitarian group warns that Central African Republic has a dangerous dependence on foreign aid and continues to be plagued by rampant violence and weak governance. The International Rescue Committee calls CAR the forgotten crisis. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
Since early 2013, about 6,000 people have died in violence in the CAR. More than 2.5 million people require emergency assistance. About 500,000 are internally displaced, with a similar number fleeing to neighboring countries. The International Rescue Committee calls it a fragile state in danger of becoming a failed state. It's released a new report, Too Soon to Turn Away, Security, Governance, and Humanitarian Need in Central African Republic. In early 2013, Muslim Seleka rebels overthrew the government of Francois Bozize. The rebels frequently attacked Christian communities, which led to the rise of the Christian anti-Balaka militias. Civilians, both Muslim and Christians, became the primary targets. In May, those involved in and affected by the conflict adopted the Republican Pact for Peace, National Reconciliation, and Reconstruction. The IRC says while the worst of the crisis appears to be over, it warns it would be a critical mistake for the international community to be lulled into thinking that stability has returned to the country. It adds that conflict and insecurity continue to be the defining feature of life in CAR. Natalie Eisenbarth is an IRC policy and advocacy officer.
Our main concern is we see the threat of history repeating itself. CAR has been quite unstable since its independence in 1960. The coup that triggered the most recent conflict is the fifth in the country's short history. We've had a number of military interventions over the course of the country being independent and see a lot of this coming from a history of short-term approaches by the international community.
She says the approach to CAR has been to supply humanitarian aid to meet immediate needs. But she says there's been a lack of investment for the long term to create stability. But the IRC says even the immediate humanitarian aid is underfunded. It says of the $613 million needed for this year, only about $130 million has been received. However, Eisenbarth says CAR needs more than aid.
The people that we spoke with to create the report that we've just released are really pointing to the need for an increase in security in the country. The communities with whom we're working, with whom the IRC is working, are, even in the midst of relative improvements in stability, are continuing to face some pretty significant security challenges.
The International Rescue Committee says investment is needed for the demobilization and disarmament of combatants. It also says the National Army and Police Force are under-equipped, lack training, and cannot ensure the population's safety or security. Other problems include gender violence. The group says it's received over 1,500 reports since the crisis began, most of them rapes. Also, more than 1.5 million people are food insecure because harvests have decreased by close to 60%. Eisenbarth says the CAR has become a forgotten crisis.
There's obviously a lot going on in the world today. You have the Syria regional refugee crisis demanding a lot of attention. You have South Sudan continuing to produce high levels of displaced people, you know, both across borders and then internally. And then, of course, Nigeria and the armed groups that are active, particularly in the Northeast.
CAR has scheduled a presidential election for October 18th and parliamentary elections for November 22nd. The report calls for the establishment of effective, inclusive, and accountable government institutions to help break the cycles of violence. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
This is Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 26 minutes past the hour on The Voice of America.
Message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
And AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Feast with your ears on Music Time in Africa. Your connection to the best pan-African music. Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, inviting you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This one, this one,
every show brings you the best music from across the continent. Old songs you know and love, and new songs to discover. You'll meet artists too. Listen to Africa's superstars and rising stars in exclusive, unplugged interviews on the radio or on my YouTube channel. Search for Heather Maxwell, Music Time in Africa. We play only the best right here on VOA Africa.
This is Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. Here's a brief recap of our top stories this hour. Burundians voted in a presidential election today after a night of unrest sparked by President Pierre Nkurunziza's bid to win a third term. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says security and trade will top the agenda during President Barack Obama's visit to the country this week. And the UN Refugee Agency reports increasing numbers of Nigerian refugees in Cameroon are moving to a more secure UNHCR camp. Coming up, we'll have our feature segment. I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and we're live from Washington. This is Africa News Tonight on the VOA Sports with Sunny is next. Time now for the sunny side of sports with Sonny Young. Hello, Sonny.
Hello, Yehias.
Sonny, I understand you're kicking off with some football news.
Yehias, we're going to kick off in the 1996 Olympic City of Atlanta, Georgia. That's where the semifinals of the CONCACAF Gold Cup football tournament will be played Wednesday night. The defending champion United States will host Jamaica in the first semifinal at the Georgia Dome. And that will be followed by the second semifinal between Panama and Mexico. The Mexicans and the Americans, longtime regional rivals and the two most successful teams in the Gold Cup, appear headed for a showdown in Sunday's final. Mexico is coming off a controversial 1-0 victory over Costa Rica in extra time on Sunday at MetLife Stadium just outside New York City. In the 123rd minute, Mexican striker Oribe Peralta went down fairly easy in the box after a slight touch from Costa Rican defender Roy Miller. Mexico's captain Andres Guardado stepped up and converted the penalty kick. The United States, meanwhile, is coming off a 6-0 rout of Cuba in Baltimore, Maryland. Clint Dempsey, the Gold Cup tournament's leading scorer with 6 goals, had a hat trick against the Cubans, who were demoralized after several players defected before the match. The winners of Wednesday's semifinals in Atlanta will travel north to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, where the Gold Cup final will be played Sunday at Lincoln Financial Field. Meanwhile, Clint Dempsey is one of 6 U.S. national team players selected for next week's Major League Soccer All-Star Game, which will be played at Dick's Sporting Goods Park in the western U.S. city of Commerce City, Colorado. Dempsey plays for the MLS club Seattle Sounders when he's not suiting up for the U.S. national team. The other U.S. national team players picked are USA captain Michael Bradley of Toronto FC, DeMarcus Beasley of the Houston Dynamo, goalkeeper Nick Raimondo of Real Salt Lake, Omar Gonzalez of the Los Angeles Galaxy, and Graham Zusi of Sporting Kansas City. Still with the Major League Soccer All-Star Game, which will be played July 29th, let's give a sunny side of sports shout-out for Sierra Leonean striker Kai Kamara of the Columbus Crew, the leading scorer in MLS with 14 goals. The 30-year-old Kamara is in his 11th season in Major League Soccer, and it's been his best one yet, capped off with that all-star selection. Nigerian striker Obafemi Martins of the Seattle Sounders was also picked for the MLS All-Star Game, but he'll miss the exhibition contest because of injury.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.
America. Hello, everybody. From that very first broadcast during World War II, and ever since, the voice of America has been the voice of freedom. So on behalf of the American people and the millions around the world who draw hope and strength from your work, thank you all for being the proud and steady voice of America.
Voice of America!
Voice of America's news, talk, and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live, anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
And when you visit VOAnews.com, make sure you check out the Sunny Side of Sports blog, in which I write about a variety of sporty topics. My latest blog post is titled Mandela and Music and Sports as Cultural Conduits for Unity. On July 18th, Nelson Mandela's birthday, I participated in a panel discussion on the late great anti-apartheid leader and how sports and music fit into his vision of unity and freedom for all. Sitting beside me was Kathy Sledge of Sister Sledge, whose 1979 hit song, We Are Family, gave a dance beat to family unity. After reading my blog post, the VOA's Nightline Africa sportsman, Shagun Dot on the Spot Adeyemi, checked in from Lagos, Nigeria. Shagun writes, "This is quite inspirational and indeed speaks to who Mandela really was in terms of his love for sport. He was once a boxer and music. He never shied away from showing his deft dance steps," writes Shagun. Shagun adds, "Then, of course, Sister Sledge, the group that rocked the world in the late 1970s with their hit song, We Are Family. Last week," says Shagun, "that same song triggered a huge dance fest at my wife's school's graduation right here in Lagos. Dance on, Shagun!"
And our goals inside. We know we don't get to
Sister Sledge with their smash 1979 hit, We Are Family. If you're keeping score, sports fans, Kathy Sledge recorded the lead vocals for that tune in one take. She also smiled at the Mandela Day conference when I mentioned how the 1979 World Series baseball champion Pittsburgh Pirates made We Are Family their official theme song on their way to winning the trophy. American Zach Johnson won the British Open Golf Trophy Monday after beating Australian Mark Leishman and South African Louis Oosthuizen of South Africa in a dramatic three-man playoff in St. Andrews, Scotland. Nick Dye reports from St. Andrews.
Johnson's a humble man, accepting he's an under-the-radar player, but he loves Lynx golf, and he's twice before finished top 10 in the Open. The 2007 Augusta champion has enjoyed one of the lowest rounds of the final day, a 66, to soar to the top of the leaderboard. He noted Leishman miss a birdie putt at the last, which could have given the Australian a victory. He saw Oosthuizen, the 2010 champion, birdie 18 to make it a three-man playoff. Johnson then birdied the opening two holes of the four-hole decider and never looked back. Jordan Spieth, chasing a hat-trick of Grand Slam titles, came up just short in fourth. The Irish amateur Paul Dunn faltered on the final day, leaving another American, Jordan Niebrugger, with a silver medal. But the gold medal goes to the champion golfer of the year, Zach Johnson.
When my game's good, you know, certainly I surface onto the radar. I don't know if it's ever really beeping on me. But, you know, I said it back in 2007. I mean, I feel like God gave me the ability to play a game. I try to take it very seriously. I realize it's just a game. I'm just a guy from Iowa that has been blessed with a talent, and, you know, this game provides great opportunity. And, you know, the more opportunities, and I think if you mentally look at it that way, it kind of takes the pressure off. You know, I don't want to make it any bigger than what it should be. This isn't going to define me or my career. At least I hope it doesn't. I mean, it's not my legacy. Now, granted, as a professional athlete and as a golfer, I'm going to relish this. I'm going to savor this. I'm humbled by this, but my legacy should be my kids, my family, that kind of thing.
An emotional Zach Johnson, the 2015 British Open golf champion. I'm VOA Sonny Young, and that's the sunny side of sports. Back to Yahias Wuhee.
Thank you, Sonny, and listen to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:31 UTC and 18:31 UTC. And on Friday, Sonny has an expanded half-hour edition of the sunny side of sports at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari is in Washington for his first official state visit. He met President Obama Monday and other senior government officials, including Vice President Joe Biden and Secretary of State John Kerry. They discussed bilateral issues, including his plans to weed out corruption and unveil his plans to fight Boko Haram. This morning, VOA's Peter Cloete spoke with President Buhari about his meeting with President Obama and whether Buhari's expectations were met.
Mr. President, thanks for speaking with the Voice of America News.
Thank you.
How did your meeting go with President Obama, and were your expectations met?
Well, I'm grateful that President Obama invited me, and since we met at G7 in Germany last month, well, he extended the invitation, I came, and he clearly knows the problems in Nigeria about the insecurity in the country, the problem of the economy, unemployment, and the corruption in the country. And he made the undertaking that as soon as we can produce the necessary documents that will give the legal backing to the recovery, once it's traced to the United States government will cooperate. I don't think I can get a better assurance than that.
Mr. President, when you came into office, you said the coffers of the Nigerian kitty was empty. How do you intend to recoup monies siphoned out of the country? Because reports say about $150 billion have been siphoned out of the country within the last 10 years.
Well, it's not busy. We have to trace it and get the documents. both for shipping of the illegal crude at its destinations, which accounts the payments were credited, and then identify the people responsible, both in the system, in Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation, and those that ordered it. That means the technocrats and the politicians that are responsible for this diversion. And of course, the outright theft of public funds, either through inflating contracts or doubling it. So the most important thing for us is to try and get those documents so that final prosecution will be possible. Because we don't want this serious recovery of stolen money to be reduced to token assignment. We have to get the documents, we have to identify the persons, and we then start the process of prosecution.
Well, you promised during your campaign that you're going to stamp out corruption. People say that corruption is endemic in the structures of the government. How do you plan to weed it out?
Well, it's a very well-known case that there is no Ministry of First Title in Nigeria that you will go without financial and administrative instructions. Those who are conveniently ignored. So for people who refuse to be accountable, they will be held responsible.
Morale of your military folks were a little down before you took power. You changed strategy, moving some folks to the north to fight the insurgency. How sure are you that your plan will succeed, especially when Boko Haram has stepped at attacks with suicide bombings now?
We have trained the commanders. New set of troops have been trained. And the joint multinational joint task force, comprising of troops from Chad, Niger, Nigeria, Benin Republic, would be deployed in the theater of operation. So really, this is the practical and the realistic way the problem can be faced.
So, Mr. President, how confident should Nigerians be with the change that you promised that you will deliver, especially when you are yet to name your cabinet? You've asked them for patience, but they're saying we want change now. You know your people more than I do.
Well, if you follow up developments, the eight governments of the former ruling party, the PDP, eight governments, find out none of them formed its government within 2 months of its swearing in. So why so much pressure has been brought on APC to act with immediate effect, especially when there are so many things wrong?
So talking about the APC, we recently read about the rancor in the Senate and the House of Reps fighting among themselves, and people are saying, well, why are they giving the president a hard time? So they asked that you step in to try to resolve some of these impasses. Why not act, Mr. President, they asked?
Well, you have to look very hard at the constitutional position. The National Assembly, the upper and the lower houses, they have got their own system of choosing their leaders. And among the system is what they call rating among their colleagues. If you check, there was a heavy attrition of the members of the National Assembly. More than 70% of them didn't come back to the National Assembly. So the remaining 30% are those that have experience of running the National Assembly, both upper and lower houses. It's up to them, you know, to choose their leaders. But certainly the party has a role. The party will firstly make sure that the accepted system of choosing leaders or getting rid of them is aligned with the rules and regulation of the National Assembly itself.
Mr. President, last but not the least, I will quote you. You said Nigeria must first put new rules of conduct and governance in place. How do you intend to implement that?
What we intend to do is to insist that whatever institutions do is constitutional. And what is not constitutional must be properly explained. For example, this lifting of illegal lifting of crude, you can see the documents were forged, and it's done sometimes, a lot of the times, with the cooperation of members of NNPC. Certainly they can't say they are loading Nigerian crude into an unknown, unregistered ships. So there's a lot of disrespect for the laws of the country that had been taking place for more than 10 years. And that shouldn't frustrate us and stop us from operating. We just draw a line, we continue, but wherever we uncover that public funds have been siphoned or crude has been stolen, we trace it through the movement of the ships, through the accounts the payments went through, and this cannot be done overnight.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Thank you very much.
That was Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari. He was speaking to reporter Peter Clote. And we conclude our show this evening with Alonso of Sierra Leone. Here is his hit song, My Music.
Situations bothers me. I listen to my music, and if I got a problem, I solve it with my music. Hey, man, I respect my music because I make money with my music. I ain't funny with my music because I travel around the world because of music. And you can take away my money, take away my car, or you can take away my music. You can take my girl in my house, but not my music. My music. I got love for my music. Because I find peace in my music. My music. Hey, I'm hopeful with my music. Internationally known for my music, cause I spread the message with my music. Some people hate me for my music, they say I'm too hot with my music. Hey, but it can't stop my music, because I got Christ in my music. There's so much power in music, that's why I'm helpless without my music. Hey, but Mali preach with music, and Fela Kuti die for music. Man, I'ma fight for my music, cause it can't shine through music. It's the only friend that I know. Music is the only thing I own. The only way I can express myself is through my music. My music. I got love for my music. My music. Because I find peace in my music. My music, hey, I'm hopeful with my music.
soul. And music is the only friend I know, the only thing that makes me happy.
Alonzo of Sierra Leone with My Music. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America on the following frequencies, 1580 and 6080 kilohertz. Tune in to Africa News Tonight at 16 and 18 hours UTC, Monday through Friday. And with that, we wrap up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Up next, our VOA editorial. I'm Hayes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our websites at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Werkinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Mozambique took a welcome and public stand against wildlife trafficking this month by destroying 2.4 tons of elephant ivory and 86 pieces of rhino horn, weighing more than 420 pounds. U.S. Embassy staff were among those present at the event and issued a statement applauding the bold action by the government of Mozambique in the destruction of confiscated stockpiles. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service also issued a statement on July 10th, adding, "We are hopeful that this signifies a renewed commitment to combat poaching and wildlife trafficking." Mozambique represents the 10th country to engage in destruction of confiscated illegal ivory since the service held its first ivory crush in November 2013. Rampant poaching is taking its toll within Mozambique and on neighboring countries. Mozambique has lost 48% of its elephants in just the past 5 years. Recent surveys revealed that there are only 10,300 elephants left in the country. To the west of Mozambique, rhino poaching in South Africa skyrocketed from 7 rhinos poached in 2000 to 1,215 rhinos poached in 2014. Poaching also affects the rangers who put their lives on the line to defend these magnificent animals. Mozambique has experienced a number of significant thefts of seized ivory and rhino horn, and the United States recognizes the merit of destroying this stockpile, not only to signal how seriously Mozambique is taking this issue, but also to prevent any potential reentry of these confiscated items into illegal trade. The government of Mozambique's decision to publicly destroy their confiscated ivory and rhino horn sends a clear message that poaching and wildlife trafficking will no longer be tolerated. The United States is committed to working with its partner, Mozambique, to stop a trade which threatens rhinos and elephants with extinction.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.
Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in Africa news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the